I want you to ignore my title this morning. It was slipping on ice. It's not what I wanted. It's what I want to say, sort of, but not. And Dara's on vacation, and so she wasn't here to change the order of worship for me, so that got put in. So I changed my title. I mean, I know I always fall when I'm on ice, because I can't skate. When I do, I continually fall on my backside. If the ice was liquefied, I'd drown. And if you are unaware, ice is unforgiving. It is painfully hard. Your feet go up, your body becomes air, and the landing is painfully uncomfortable. I just can't skate. And the hard thing was, my best friend growing up, Rich, he could skate like crazy. He played hockey. He could stop on a dime, spraying shaved ice all in your face, retrieve the puck, and go score a goal. That was not me. So I renamed this sermon, The Center, or Christ the Center. Christ the Center. Bonhoeffer had a book by that title. No matter the storms of life, the curveballs thrown, the rug pulled out from under our feet, Christ is the center. The Christ who welcomes us to walk on water to the middle of the storm. We approach this story this morning with a lot of humility. Jesus walks on water. Let's pause. Really? How are we to unpack the story? Is walking on water our experience? We sink in water. We don't walk. We read of an axe floating in 2 Kings chapter 6. An axe floating in water. And I placed my hand on a Bible that it sank to ocean depths every time when I threw a hammer into the water. Or a quarter. None of us here have ever seen or experienced or even hoped to walk on water. None of us. We put long sticks on our feet, pulled by an engine-powered boat to give us the feeling of water walking, gliding across the water. People have turned the idea of being on top of the water into a big money-making scheme. You know, we get kids in the boats, and we make sure that they are attached to life preservers, right? There's no Calvin Klein label on most of these things. It doesn't matter if it's one of those old orange ones. They make sure that all are sporting the ugly orange flotation thingies. So given a crisis, kids will float and not sink. They're not going to be on top of the water. There's no walking on water in an orange thingy decision making. Don't worry, we can't walk on water. We will sink trying to walk on water. So look at the text. Jesus has just fed 5,000 people. He tried to run to the mountains to get away from people because he got the news of John the Baptist getting his head chopped off and had emotionally unraveled. This is his cousin. But the need for Jesus was to serve. So he pushed aside his need to get alone, and he put people over his needs. He entered with empathy into their lives, and we get a welcome to who Jesus really is. But what we find here is 5,000 have been fed. The hour has come to say, you know, I love you, but it's time for you all to go home. We have all experienced that on different occasions. It's time for these people to go home. Especially family from visiting out of town. Jesus made his disciples get in a boat and travel to the other side of the lake. He commissioned them. He commanded them, his disciples, before going back and giving the benedictions to the 5,000. Now stop right here. He goes back to give the benediction over all these 5,000 people and send them home. But before that, he commands the disciples to get in a boat and go across the sea. Hold on to that in your head. Everything in this story, the storm, seeing Jesus walk on water, Peter stepping out of the boat, all of it happens because the disciples are doing exactly what they've been told to do. Jesus sends them right into the middle of a storm. They're obeying without any understanding that the storm is awaiting them. Storms in our lives are experienced because we follow Jesus' commands. The disciples went on the water because Jesus told them to get in the boat. He sent them into the storm. They were obeying what Jesus said. They didn't say, no, we'll wait for you while you go give the benediction. If we follow Jesus, there will be storms, smoke-filled skies, unthinkable circumstances. A storm does not mean we are heading in the wrong direction in the boat. Our boats. We have gotten into the boat to paddle to the other side, and there's going to be complications in following Jesus. Jesus dismissed the crowd while his companions paddled their way to the other side, but Jesus still needed to have some alone time. So he goes to the hills, the mountains, around the Sea of Galilee, and it's dark, and he could see the disciples because of the light off of the water, but they weren't able to see Jesus. It was too dark. Have you ever manipulated or orchestrated or administrated a situation so you could just have some alone time? Some peace and quiet is what about Bob said. Well, Jesus sends the disciples across the sea in a boat. And they are doing what they're told, and the winds are strong, and the disciples were sweating trying to navigate the weather, and they were getting scared. The waves, the wind, the storm were making travel across the water impossible. Though they tried. And here's the haunting question. During the fourth watch of the night, that's between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., the fourth watch of the night, Jesus strolled toward the boat on the water. He sees their struggle. We are haunted by demons and ghosts during the fourth watch of the night. That's when we usually have those kinds of experiences. We are all in some panic this morning. Every one of us. Life's waves, storms, and winds are causing us great anxiety. And we don't know what to do. We're sweating, trying to move in the right direction. And Jesus strolls into our stormy life circumstances with his feet planted on top of our crisis. And he walks out onto our storms. The 12 are sure what they see is a ghost. Think of that. They look out and they say, ghost! It freaks them out. We'd be freaked out. Our insecurity, our fear, our storms cause a quick response that the uncanny or the demonic or the unexplainable or our visualized fear is somehow the center of our experience and not Christ. We slide Jesus to the bench, the sidelines, and place the ghost in the center of our storm. It's a ghost! And I'm telling you, I believe in ghosts. I believe in ghosts. Think of a ghost, a weird, uncanny experience. We erase that possibility from our interpretation in contemporary situations. But notice it just rolled off the disciples' tongues. It was not something they thought about. Well, do we believe in ghosts? This was part of the way they saw the world. It just came rolling off their lips. And Jesus was walking on the water. A ghost is approaching their boat. What are we experiencing in the open sea is supernatural beyond our capacity to comprehend. But let me just tell you, Samuel comes up from the dead in the Old Testament. He's not happy about being called up from the dead. In that story, he's not happy at all. He's really annoyed. But he came up from the dead. I don't even know what to do with that, but acknowledge that it's there and I have to live with it. Elijah and Moses show up at the transfiguration, the three main disciples, they all see him. They were dead. Can't explain it. Don't need to. It's just there in all of our modern enlightenment, rationalistic, black and white, arrogant faces. As if we can think everything through and everything has some kind of calculation except for the longings of our hearts. That there's got to be more to this world. There's got to be more to life. There's another world we can't see. But if I were to get us sharing about our experiences in our lives that we want to say are coincidental, my guess is ghosts would be in the story somehow. Or things that we just can't explain, that they just make us sound like freaking charismatic, crazy people. Those in the boat think that Jesus on the water is a ghost. And this story asks us, are we open to the mystery of this God-saturated world? Are we open to the mystery of this God-saturated world? I could make my story about unexplainable mystery. I can make it central to this point. Are we so secular that the only difference between us and the faithless is that we manage to take Jesus on a little postage stamp and put him up in the corner of our lives when his face should be all over it, all over the front of the letters we're mailing? I love Malcolm Guite. All of his books will travel to Ohio. Can't say that, but about five authors. I read and read him all the time. He's a theologian. He's an Oxford poet. You know, one of the things, I just watched a dialogue between Eugene Peterson and Christian Wineman this week, and a quote: our human words stretch to describe the mysteries of life. We strain at the border of our language. That's why poets will save us from our disenchanted world. They'll help re-enchant our worlds. Their words squeak us past the edges of our language, giving felt glimpses, human responses of what we hope to articulate. Well, he went to a graveyard. He went to a graveyard, Malcolm Guite, where Charles Williams is buried. Now, it's called the churchyard of the Holy Cross. You know, graveyards are uncanny places, especially if you're there all alone in the dark. You get these, it's weird. A lot of people just stay away from them. Well, he was the oddest of the Inklings. Charles William was a member of that Inklings group that ate at the Eagle and the Child pub. But he was the oddest. T.S. Eliot said that Charles William was the holiest man that he ever met. And he met C.S. Lewis, he met Tolkien, they were all in that group. Well, Malcolm Guite wanted to go to stand at his grave. But when he arrived at the cemetery, it was all overgrown. And in searching, he became lost. He was in a maze of tombstones, an unkept brush. He paused. He was discouraged. He felt like a pilgrim failure. He just so wanted to get to this grave. And it was at this point that out of this huge, unkept area, a cat, a black cat, walked out. It's on the screen. That's the picture he took. It just walked out and rubbed up against his leg. It was purring. A little bit in front of him in the weeds, turned and looked at him, turned back and kept walking. And he followed it. And that cat took him right there to Charles Williams' grave and sat right up on that tombstone and purred and purred and purred, demanding that he get some honorary petting. And Malcolm Guite wrote this. It was a little uncanny, you think? Ghost-like? Charles Williams did not set his books in imaginary worlds, but firmly on our own. He didn't write the books of Tolkien and Lewis. And it is into this familiar world that the magical powers of the supernatural and the spiritual presences come unbidden or unseen existences become seeable. Unseen existences become seeable. In Oxford, that he was asked to speak at, and he stopped to see Charles Williams' grave on the way. And he was preaching at the same church where Lewis gave his famous sermon called The Weight of Glory. So he gets to the place, and he talks to this guy, a very good friend of him, Redford. And they had worked on books together, and he said that he had just finished visiting Williams' grave. And on the grave, it just said, Charles Williams, and then under it, it says, under the mercy. Under the mercy. We're all under the mercy. And before he could say anything about what happened with the black cat, he said, the guy, Redford, said, you know, years ago, Malcolm, I had a strange, almost mystical experience there. Lost. So uncanny. I somehow got lost in the tangled paths and the overgrown brush. I couldn't find the grave. And then from just all of a sudden out of the undergrowth, this little red fox popped out. Looked at me, trotted down the brush that you couldn't see the path. So I waded through it, and he took me right to Charles Williams' grave. Then Guite told him his story that he just had, and they just sat there quietly for quite a bit of time before he went to preach. Just glad to be reminded we're all under the mercy. There's unseen existences all around us, and they're unexplainable. It's appropriate for us to say that the boat is the church. A lot of the church fathers, they would look at this story and they'd say, yeah, the boat's the church. We're in the boat, Noah's Ark. We're called to live in the Ark of the church. We enter into Noah's boat. I'm not kind when people tell me that they do not worship regularly in a community, but they say they believe in Christ. I tell them to get their butts in the boat. With all the animal crap, all the smells, all the messiness, which is us. And in that, learn the hard lessons of how to love like Jesus. The church. This sounds harsh, but a churchless Christian is not following Jesus. That's all there is to it. Do we in the midst of this, and it may be a hurricane storm. Hawaii is going through that right now. It may be a rainstorm. Indiana. But we all have different levels of storms in our lives, category 2, 3, 4, or 5, but we have storms. What does Jesus say to Peter? Come, Peter. Come. The waves are high, the water's splashing in your face, but just step out on the water and come to me. And what he says is in smack dab in the middle of the storm, what does Jesus say to you and me? He is coming to them in the storm as the I am. It's right there in the Greek, the text. Moses wants to know how to speak to God. You tell the Israelites, I am has sent you. Jesus shows up in John's gospel, and what do we hear? I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. I am the bread. I am the door. I am the shepherd. I am the ladder. I am the resurrection. I am the vine. And in the middle of our story, at verse 27, Jesus says, it is I. It is I am. The whole thing is right there in the text. Don't be afraid. It's I. Don't be afraid. It is important for us to allow the structure of the story to punch us in our guts, because it's exactly in the middle of the story that Jesus says, I am. Right in the middle. It's the words I am, Bruner says, in the Matthew story are in the exact middle of two acts of play in the same story. There's about 90 words. In all of our storms, the I am is present in the center of our storms, not outside of our storms. And sometimes he's called us into those storms. Sometimes they're just life storms. Our storms do not define or determine or detain the I am, Jesus. He walks into our storms toward us to save. But don't you just love Peter here? I love Peter. What unthinkable is Jesus asking you and me to step out onto? Peter steps out onto the water. Jesus says, come on, Peter. Because Jesus tells him to come, follow me. Peter asks Jesus to tell him to step into the unthinkable. Jesus commands Peter, and Peter follows. Don't you wonder what the other disciples back on the boat were thinking? They're all in the boat. They're going through all the fear and everything in this unthinkable storm. Maybe Peter looked over his shoulder and said, hey, James, look at me. Look at me, James. Is your sorry butt still in the boat? Come on, join me. Get out here. Won't you erase your intellectual struggles? John, I'm walking on water. And then the walking on water flooded Peter's person with fear. I mean, can't you imagine Peter? You know, with each step, this is not normal. Not normal at all. What am I doing? Stepping out in faith into the unthinkable is not normal. It's not. Peter at this moment is in our response in following the command of Jesus. Like, what am I doing? You all remember Curtis Chang. Crazy Jesus, or what was this book? Crazy Love, thank you. But he had this huge ministry going, and he sold everything and moved into the heart of poverty. And people were saying, you are crazy. Yeah, well, I'm stepping out in faith. This is what I'm being called to do. This is the way I'm going to be called to live. He got ridiculed. Christian friends called him up and said, you're stupid. This is wrong. Yeah, it's a little shaky. It's like stepping out on water. But then he took his eyes off of Jesus. He said, what am I doing? And he started to sink. Peter's you and Peter's me. Peter is one moment is saturated with faith. He's bursting with trust in Jesus. And then he examines the landscape of what's going on. And he looks at his situation, and he takes in waves, he takes water in the face, and he takes in the unthinkable. He looks at the waves and the water and the walking on it, and faith turns quickly to unfaith in the storm. And he starts to sink to the depths of despair. But the I am is present. Jesus, the I am, is central to the story. Jesus walks on the water of our storms. He sees Peter sinking, bubbles are surfacing. Peter may have looked at the storm and the confusion and all the hype of walking on the water, but when the absurdity of his situation collided with his faith in Jesus, he sank like a box of rocks. And we're told that Peter glanced at the waves, the wind, the waters, and he began to sink. His focus needed correction, but grace abounds. Because this story's not about Peter. We get to the point at the center. It's about Jesus. Peter took his eyes off of Jesus. He looked at the white caps. He felt the waves splashing on his bare legs. His face was dampened with the sea's storm spray. And Peter's focus was diverted from the I am to the weather of his life. What matters in the story is not Peter's ability to focus on Jesus or ours. Did you hear that? That's not the point of this story. What matters in the story is Jesus never took his eyes off of Peter. He never took his eyes off of Peter. And Jesus will never take his eyes off of you or me. Peter was afraid in his sinking. I can identify with that, can you? He was afraid in his storm. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Abraham, don't be afraid. That's what God said to Abraham. Gideon, don't be afraid. Yeah, you have what? 300 people? You're going against an army of what? 10,000? Ah, don't be afraid. Children of Israel, you're standing at the Red Sea. Pharaoh's army's breathing down your neck, and they're coming with horses and chariots. Don't be afraid. Hey, Mary, welcome into the body, your body, this child. Everyone's going to think you're a whore. But don't be afraid. It's the Son of God. I'm not married. I don't have a wife. I'm a virgin. Don't worry, Mary. Fear not. Peter took his eyes off of Jesus to take in the waves, the wind, the storm all around him. But in the whole story, Jesus the I Am never took his eyes off of Peter, even while Peter was taking notes about the storm in his journal. From the mountains surrounding the Sea of Galilee to the waves and the storm on Galilee's waters to Peter's wavering faith, Jesus the I Am never stopped gazing at Peter, and that is what the story wants us to hear. He never takes his eyes off of you, 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 in the storms of life we are in. That's who Jesus is. And to see Jesus is to see God the Father. Who Jesus is. This is the word of the Lord for us this morning. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Let's pray.